Good evening. Welcome to the 2015 annual wrap-up. This is January 2016. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I want to wish you a happy new year. I hope you had a great holiday. I woke up on January 1st, and the first thing I felt was, this is going to be a very good year. So it was an auspicious beginning. This is our 2015 annual wrap-up. The wrap-ups, as you know, are the most important thing I think we do. We do 4 a year, obviously only one annual, and these are designed to help very busy, important people be able to synthesize and distill with as little time as possible. And so my hope is these really help you understand what's going on. Our theme this year is the space-based economy. I've been trying to understand for many years what is happening in outer space around us and the impact that it's had on our lives, not just now, but over our history. It goes back thousands of years. And I must say it's one of the hardest but one of the most rewarding intellectual experiences I've ever undertaken. If Schumacher says, our task is to look at the world and see it whole, and I feel as though I've spent my whole life kind of asking this and trying to answer this question, why was the world that I was born into so primitive and illogical and violent? And I've managed to watch the covert operations that sort of ate through my childhood community and my family, in which I've sort of squabbled with my whole life, overtake the world and become much more obvious. And always the question is why? And I don't have the answers, but I feel like I finally have a framework that makes sense to me. The planet, my history, my life, they make sense, and that gives me much more excitement about the future and about my ability to navigate the future. So it's one of the reasons I think that 2000 is going to be very good for the Solari team and for me. This summer, I spent time in the Australian outback, and it was really marvelous in I went to Ayers Rock and saw the land formations, both Attila and Ayers Rock. And I got to sit around the fire under the stars of the southern sky and listen to the Aborigine creation stories and visit the caves and learn more about the Aborigine creation stories in the caves. One of our guides could show us where how you could see the International Space Station fly overhead. It was fascinating. And I became persuaded of the critical importance of integrating space into our economic and investment views on the Solari report. And that decision was one of the reasons for my participation again this year in the Secret Space Program Conference, this time in Austin, Texas. I made a presentation on the space-based economy, focusing, in fact, on the orbital platform. And that led to the theme in the 2015 annual wrap-up that you're listening to right now. I want to share my insights as well on stories and trends of the year and financial market performance. But again, our focus really is the space-based economy, and I think it's something that threads throughout all aspects of our lives and certainly all aspects of the financial system. There is a lot happening in terms of the public investment, or the, I would say, unclassified investment in space going on. First, the orbital platform is becoming ever more important as the satellites deliver a larger percentage of the world's economic activity, and people are trying to diversify away from the U.S. control of the satellite systems, or certainly dominance. There are efforts underway on three continents to return to the moon and build bases there. And it's interesting, the Voyager space probes are now moving out of the solar system into interstellar space. So we're not only continuing to explore the solar system, but also interstellar space. And finally, efforts are underway to build human colonies on Mars. So we're going to become an a multi-planetary civilization, and that's a very, very big change. It's a very big change to culture. It's a very big change to worldview, and that and the technological developments that are helping us make that possible, I think are going to rock our future. Our outline for the 2015 annual wrap up, which comes with a web presentation. I hope you'll click around and follow me because I'll be clicking around the web presentation and going through it. We're going to go through an introduction space. Here we go. And that's our poster for the year. We kind of have the businessman version of Johnny Rocket in a Buck Rogers kind of space ship out there traveling the planet saying, here we go. Money maps of the world. We've updated last year's money maps and added some space numbers. The space-based economy, which includes some other parts, the space-based ecosystem. Terms are so important to understanding space, and I've listed out a whole lot of terms and chronologies to help you get up to speed if your background on this stuff is as sort of thin as mine is. It's very helpful. The other is we're going to be talking a lot about a lot of phenomena that we've talked about and covered on the Solaria Report for the last couple of years, but especially for subscribers who haven't been with us through that time, we put up a resources page so it'd be easily, the concepts we talk about, the background would be easily accessible. Then news stories and trends. We also have financial markets roundup. I'm not going to spend any time on that this evening because we'll be doing that next week with the financial equity overview. Then 2016, get ready, get ready, get ready. I'll touch on the scenarios I want to use for planning. And then we have best books and our winners of hero movie and documentary category. So let's just dive in. In the introduction, I start with one of my favorite quotes from Ken Kesey. The reverberation often exceeds through silent the sound that sets it off. The reaction occasionally outdoes by way of repose the event that stimulated it, and the past not uncommonly takes a while to happen and some long time to figure out. And in fact, we live in a world where the past takes a long time to figure out. And sometimes it seems in the Matrix everything is a lie. Since World War II, probably one of the greatest government investments in the developed world has been keeping you and me in the dark regarding what's going on in outer space and what the human race is doing about it. It's the primary reason why trillions of dollars are disappearing and we are overrun by organized crime and financial fraud. It's interesting, if you look at those of us who were inspired by President Kennedy's support of a space exploration, believe we were headed into space in a big way. After Kennedy's death, NASA budget peaked at 4.5% of the federal budget. It's currently only 0.5%. And the question is, did our investment in space decline following the 1960s, or did it just go dark? I believe it went dark, and that explains a lot of the financial shenanigans that we've been watching. Secrecy regarding space is, I believe, ultimately what's driving centralization of control, or secrecy regarding what's going on in space and what we're doing about it, I should say, is driving centralization of control. But space, because of the satellites, is so critical to implementing that centralized control. So if you don't want to live in a totalitarian society, it's very phenomenally useful to understand what's going on in space and get some perspective on it. I also believe that we have, and very invisibly so, developed secret space weapons, and those have been critical to what has been going on, including the strength of the dollar as reserve currency, and they are very important to the U.S. military position. Now, when we started rebalancing the global economy, that just coincidentally started, I don't think it was a coincidence, when the U.S. launched its GPS system, global positioning system, the first space-based navigation system that could provide location and time information in all weather conditions anywhere on Earth. It went fully operational in 1995, the same time as the creation of the World Trade Organization. And until the Russians got their system up in 2011, we were the dominant player. This raises a very important chicken and egg question, and I think it's the main question I ask in space-based economy. And that is, are we rebalancing the global economy because the satellite infrastructure made it possible? Or, in fact, is the reason we're rebalancing the global economy and doing it in such a rushed and fast way to create the human, intellectual, and industrial capacity we need to invest in space infrastructure and exploration necessary to become a multiplanetary civilization? In other words, Are we rebalancing the global economy because we needed thousands, hundreds of thousands of Asian engineers from China and India to help us get there and get there fast? I think it's a very important question. If I had to guess today, I would say the goal was to become a multiplanetary civilization. Of course, then the question is why? While I'm not a big fan of the methods of the national security state and the extraordinary amount of money it spends without any kind of transparency or accountability, and I'm very concerned about its use of the satellite systems for personal surveillance and entrainment, I must say I agree with the importance of organizing capital to get us to become a multiplanetary civilization. I think it's essential for the human race to do so. And so one of the things I stress again and again in the wrap-up is the importance of bringing transparency to the outer space issues and what we're doing in outer space. I think it can make an enormous difference in reducing the chances of becoming a highly centralized totalitarian state. I think transparency is essential, but I also think it's essential for the human race to have a very positive vision. As I said, a quote that I love from Robert Dean, it is the destiny of our children and grandchildren to travel the stars. And I think that's a vision that we can all share. And if we can bring transparency to these issues, I'm hoping that we can start to also rebuild advanced human civilization here on Earth. Let me just touch on money maps of the world. As you can see, we now, the U.S. has 250,000 people working in their space programs. Russia has 250 and China has 300. So China has raced ahead. And if you look at the speed at which Russia and China are now cooperating, the U.S. is in for a real run for its money. But as I said, it looks to me, if you look at the long-term strategic goals, there's more collaboration than we might assume from watching the newspapers. So let's turn to the space-based economy. As I said, I think it's unbelievably important to bring transparency if we want to reduce the centralization momentum and start to build a more centralized economy. One thing I wanted to point out, I'll just skip through some of the areas, and again, I hope you click along with me. If you look at analyses and surveys, the American people are not particularly supportive of government playing a major role in space exploration, which is a real problem because certainly there's plenty of activity in the satellite and the orbital platform, which is commercially viable. But if we're going to be a real factor in space, we're going to need major amounts of government money. If we're going to bring transparency, you know, we don't want it to fall into the trap of they have to steal it to get the money to do it. But if you look at the polls, 47% say it's they're supportive of funding, government funding for advancing space exploration. 94% say they'll pay to keep the country safe for terrorism, which is why we're getting terrorism and the space exploration is black. If you look at secrecy and the black budget, again, I think that tremendous amounts of the money that have been going into the black budget have been helping to build the infrastructure both for the kinds of things you need here on the planet to support space exploration, but then into space exploration as well. And there are a lot of issues and concerns in that, and I won't address all of them. But I think it's one of the things that has really built up an extraordinary national security state and enormous operations to keep it secret. If you look at the amount of money that's spent on what I call COINTELPRO operations that target and harass anybody who tries to uncover the facts, or the corporate media that broadcasts an unending stream of bizarre explanations, or even the alternative internet media, which is now overrun by disinformation. There's an extraordinary amount of money spent to keep us from understanding what is going on in space and the human response to it. And this edifice has really created a national security state, which I believe is completely out of control. We have Congress appropriating funds despite the overwhelming fact that funds are being spent outside the law, both as stipulated by the Constitution or financial management laws. And I think that's why transparency, again, is so important. One of the most important questions to me is why the rush? If we made a decision to become a multiplanetary civilization, and to do that, to rebalance the global economy, we're clearly doing things in a very hurried manner. The Sir James Goldsmith video, which I'm always trying to get all the subscribers to watch, does a great job of explaining how traumatic the speed at which we're doing this is. And the question is why. This raises just an unbelievably tough series of unanswered questions and what someone would call wicked problems. And they all come down to whether or not the Earth is at risk because of nuclear testing, nuclear waste, and nuclear accidents, geophysical changes such as pole shift, getting hit by an asteroid or comet, weakening of the magnetic field, pole shifts. You can go on and on. Of course, resource depletion is one of them, and sort of the economics of peak everything. And finally, there's fear by the leadership. If you bring this technology out of the lab, are you going to have problems keeping control, and are you going to be able to govern through accelerating change? So there's a long list of maybes, but clearly something is driving this, and we don't begin to understand what it is. I also think this is the basis of technology transfer. To me, there's a wide gap between the technology exists and we're watching around us, whether in the UFOs or in some laboratories related to breakthrough energy. Somebody clearly has anti-gravity propulsion and breakthrough energy if you look at the UFOs flying around. So, but we're seeing a lot of that technology transferred out of the labs. I think it's been the basis of a lot of what's going on in Silicon Valley and with different kinds of technology. One of the allegations is, of course, that it was reverse engineered from alien craft. And I do some describing of that in the wrap up. But clearly, we see this enormous divergence between what humankind has accessible and what we're applying. And I think this is a very important question that I continue to watch, because if you're an investment advisor, one of the things you discover is a lot of the market capitalization depends on very legacy technology when clearly much more advanced technology exists. And the question is, will that technology be out of the, you know, brought out of the lab and devastate the valuations of companies that are using legacy technology? And of course, we ask that question every week when we look at what's happening to the oil price. And so technology transfer is an important issue for that reason. It's also an important issue because a lot of this technology was financed with government taxpayer money, with black budget money, with military R&D. And so if the taxpayer pays for it, but it shows up on the balance sheet owned by private investors, where's the sense of that? And I think that becomes very important when we go into the reengineering of the federal budget after the presidential election. Essentially, my contention is citizens are true investors in this, and if we're going to come to the table for negotiation, we ought to come claiming our equity certificates of ownership in all of this. This leads us to the reengineering of the reserve currency. I've always believed that, as I said, Mr. Global, so long as it's digital and centrally controlled, Mr. Global will not care if the new currency system is called dollar, peso, franc, gold, silver, or wampum beads. And there is clearly a push to build out the satellite and smartphone system sufficient to get every citizen of the planet on a smartphone by 2025. If that happens, they can do financial transactions and digital currencies at low cost. They can also, unfortunately, do entrainment and mind control. And I think the not only the satellite capacity, but space weaponry is going to get is be essential to that. And it could mean that the factionalism and I mean, if you think cyber hacking on the ground is bad, where do you see what could happen to satellites? Clearly, the legal governance and military issues are tough here because we're seeing more and more countries go into space. We're seeing an incredible traffic jam in the orbital platforms, which could cause more and more tension. And we don't have the international law in place I think, to handle what is happening at high speed. There are more than a few movies lately which have been talking about the dangers of both surveillance and weaponry systems in the sky. I named some of them: the new Captain America, Winter Soldier. Actually, that's the second. There's now a third out. The new James Bond movie, Spectre. Same thing. The new Star Wars, The Force Awakens, all goes through these issues of space weapons. And interestingly enough, what they describe are large breakaway civilizations coming out of the Nazis, who are the bad guys in these movies. And if you've been listening to our conversations with Dr. Joseph Farrell, who's explored the roots of a lot of the military-industrial complex coming out of the Nazi organizations and money that survived World War II, you're going to find the parallels very interesting. Even more interesting is when you look at what is going on with private armies and mercenaries, and you combine that with the kind of technologies that are relevant to space issues, including drones and robotics, and you can start to get into some very interesting scenarios. I suspect that a lot of what the Russians are doing in space is the basis of the tensions between the United States and Russia. With the collapse of the Soviet Union and the economic collapse of the Russian economy, Russia's investment in space was very curtailed, but clearly they had a very deep and extensive capacity in that area beforehand, and Russia has revived its investment in space. They got up the second GPS, or Global Navigation Satellite System, in 2011, which is really when the tension started. And if you look at their experience in launches and in weaponry, they're the second largest exporter after we are, after us. But if you look at what they're doing across the board in this area, they're clearly competition in a serious way. And I suspect that that is a important part of the tensions and driving the oil price down and putting sanctions on the Russian will nip their capacity to keep up or to keep pushing by us in space, if you will. So it looks to me like the competition is back between the US and Russia in outer space. It's got to make it uncomfortable for the guys up there on the International Space Station. The space industry is growing and growing fast. There's a great study from the OECD, which wrote a space economy as of 2011, and now has come out with one as of 2014. We link to it, and I would really strongly recommend it. It's excellent. It is hard to unpack just the space industry because there's so much crossover between aerospace and defense, with government financing so much of what is going on in this area, clearly because so much of the economics are not commercially viable yet. But one of the things we've done is we've started to compile a track of both publicly traded and private companies involved in the space-based economy, and I'm going to be using this list to start to look deeper into what the stock market and financial markets are saying about what is going on. We've created a new email address at space@solari.com, and I would encourage you to send us any edits, comments, or additions, or post them on the wrap-up post on the website. I think the time has come to ask a very important question, and that is the global economy open or closed? In other words, are we trading with separate civilizations, whether they're human civilizations or non-human, or it's hard to understand what the UF phenomena is. There's so many different possible explanations. But I think if you look at what has been going on for the last 20 years, my experience is that the whether the economy is closed or open, I can't prove either. There's no way I could walk into a court of law and prove that our economy is closed. There's no way I could prove that it's open. Whichever position you take, you have to take on faith. And if you look at a lot of the financial commentary on this planet, it all assumes that our economy is closed, when in fact that's an assumption based in faith and conjecture. It's not based on fact. And it's important to ask that question because more and more, as you look at the ability of the powers that be to continue the slow burn, our economy is behaving much more like something that's open, particularly when it comes to technology transfer. And so this is more than a philosophic point, particularly when you have literally $40 trillion over the last 20 years disappearing out of the U.S. government in terms of missing money or bailouts. I think, you know, when you're talking about that level of financial harvesting of us and our retirement savings, it's time to ask, okay, you know, what is really going on here? And so one of the things I talk about in the space-based economy is the economy open or not? In fact, we just authorized in the Space Act of 2015 that private companies could own materials that they mine in space on asteroids. It's all part of building an economy where, in fact, it is space-based. You're manufacturing, you're sourcing materials and manufacturing in space. One of the questions I have is this just a cover story for interplanetary trade? Anyway, but I think it's time to ask that question and ask it seriously without fear of being attacked, you know, by sort of COINTELPRO kind of derision. And I get back to the fact that not only do I want to understand my world and understand what's going on, I'm very concerned about our shifting into a totalitarian society. And I know the only way to stop it is with the truth. And if enough of us start exploring the truth, looking for the truth and demanding logical explanations, I figure we're going to get to the bottom of it. I want to touch on risk issues as well. The reality is major exploration of this kind can bankrupt a society, and you know, and there are other risk issues. You can bring back very unpleasant, you know, germs and technologies from other places and other civilizations. But despite all the risks, I believe the greatest risk that we face is spiritual and cultural, which comes from the failure to face reality together about what's going on in this planet and our move into outer space. And then I think our second risk is to bet the ranch on one planet. The risks of not colonizing other planets, to me, are much greater than the risks we face in doing so. Now, the question you ask, or all of us will ask, is what does this mean to me? I think this is very important because if you look at the politics we're going into, we've been kicking the can on many budgets, the federal budgets, but also budgets in Europe, budgets around the world. And the reality is we've been paying for a whole lot of technology and assets that we're not getting ownership certificates in. And we've had a lot of our money disappearing. And there are legal ways of asserting our legal rights. And before we go into the kind of things that could happen in 2017 and 18 after the election, I think it's very important to politically assert that this is our investment and we have a right to that investment one way or the other. And we certainly have a right to the transparency about that investment. Another thing that's important is, as we've been discussing for several years in the Saleri Report, we're moving from what I call global 2.0 to global 3.0, and reinvestment in 3.0, a lot of which I think is from the $40 trillion that was shifted out during the financial coup d'etat, is really driving the economy. And it's having profound impacts on income, on employment, and asset valuation. And so I think it's very important that we each see where things are going to go. It means different things to each of us in terms of, you know, what kind of education we get or what we may do. But I think we all need to see that it's where it's going to go, because it's going to drive a lot of opportunities and risks. One of the things I mentioned in the wrap-up is the leading U.S. coal companies experienced a 77% to 95% drop in their stock prices. In 2015, we saw four companies coming into 2015. Three of them had the 77% to 95% drop. One of them went bankrupt. It's interesting, if you look at the numbers from May 31st to 2008, Peabody Energy, a leading coal company, has fallen 90%. Netflix has risen by 941%. And that's the kind of shifts you're getting between global 2.0 and 3.0. And I want to stress again, our economy is not collapsed. It's or it's not collapsing, it's being re-engineered. And the portion of our economy attributable to outer space is growing, and the related shift of technology into many sectors of our economy from that move into outer space is accelerating change everywhere. And so as that happens, portions of the industrial economy are indeed collapsing or being collapsed. I would really encourage you to think back over where we were as a society in 1915 and realize, okay, what happened between 1915 and 2000? It was pretty incredible, and I think that this century will be no different. And if you look at where we are in 2015 and where we're going to be in 3000, that's going to be or if you look at where we are in 2015, where we're going to be at 2100, let alone 3000, it's going to be quite an amazing 85 years to 2100. So just imagine those kind of changes and what it's going to mean to be a multiplanetary civilization. And I think understanding the space-based economy will help you start thinking about that and what it means to have space as an organizing principle of the change that's unfolding and what that means to your education and your knowledge. I just wanted to end with a quote from John F. Kennedy, which I love. "We choose not to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard, because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills, because that challenge is one that we are willing to accept, one we are willing to postpone, and one which we intend to win." So take a look at the theme, space-based economy. Check out the space-based ecosystem, the companies and resources. They're all up on the web presentation. And now let's turn to our next section, which is news and stories. Let me just march through them, and there's a lot more you'll find at the web presentation. I think the number one financial story was the rise in the dollar and the utter crash continuing in commodities. It was quite dramatic. We saw the dollar up. I had said it was going to go up 10 to 25%. It was up 9% in 2015, and that was following a 12% rise in 2014. So literally since the summer of 2014, it's been up 21%. What was baffling to me in 2015 was the expectation of the Fed leadership that the U.S. economy was going to come out of recession and so doing sustain global growth. If you look at what's been happening in terms of sort of top-down attacks on people's, both their assets and their finances. You thought, why do you think people in the G7 nations are going to be eager to expand, invest, and make investment and financial risk in the face of these headwinds? You know, my position is centralization is choking off financial risk. I think the top story, financial story of the year, though, I chose was one from The Economist called Dominant and Dangerous. The subtitle is, "As Americans' Economic Supremacy Fades, the Primacy of the Dollar Looks Unsustainable." Yes, the dollar was strong in terms of price, but if you look underneath, what you're watching is the dollar's market share to continue to deflate and serious investment being made globally in payment systems, including satellite systems, to build liquidity away from the dollar. It's going to create much more redundancy in the global financial system and ultimately make it stronger, but it's not good news for the dollar. As The Economist points out, it's not going to be an easy changeover from the dollar, but the dollar is clearly dominant and going to stay dominant for a while. But given the fundamental economics, that's a dangerous situation. What that translates into is our second story, which is the U.S. budget, second big trend, the U.S. budget hot potato after the election. I think there's going to be significant changes that have to be made in the federal credit and the federal budget. It's one of the reasons I think it was nobody wanted to be the new speaker of the House, but clearly Paul Ryan was persuaded to it. It's not just the problems with the budget, it's the inability of the budget, of the body politic to deal with it. And it's one of the reasons it's so important to bring transparency to the black budget and the hidden systems of finance and space, because if we're going to get a positive outcome, there are many positive ways we could re-engineer the federal budget. I got to bring it up, transparency, both of what we're doing in space and the black budget, as well as place-based financial statements and really digging in and re-engineering the money bottom up locally, which I have to say new technology can really help us do. Lots more on that when you turn to stories and trends. Global 3.0 rocks our world. Artificial intelligence, robotics, smartphones, breakthrough energy, all of these things are moving at very high speeds. Now we're hearing solar parity will come faster than expected. Some say by 2020. Artificial intelligence is moving ahead in many areas. It's certainly helping with the sort of moving a lot of financial stuff into online systems and different systems that are squeezing out the fees. We see significant downsizing in staffing at the big banks. And robots, which are integrating surprisingly well, just continue to move faster. We had one fellow come out. I put up the story saying everybody needs to get essentially a government check because artificial intelligence is going to put everybody out of work. So we all need a guarantee, basic guaranteed income. Our fourth story was reengineering local functions, and I talked a lot in 2015 about reengineering proceeding in education and healthcare, but it's also happening in enforcement in not a nice way. You see tremendous efforts in the media to smear and target the police in a way that will make it much easier for controlling enforcement top down. And then, of course, municipal operations are dealing with lots of economic issues, particularly on the pension fund and health care for retirees side. And I think that's going to continue in 2016. Under geopolitics, we see the shift to the multipolar world, which is part of the global rebalancing. But trying to sort of shift the nuts and bolts of the politics is very uncomfortable. And it certainly was in 2015, and I think was a major contributor to dampening what could have been stronger equity markets in Asia and Europe. We had the U.S. running around the world, restoring the balance, trying to make sure nobody looked better than they are. China's GDP surpassed the U.S., and China proceeded to launch the Asian Infrastructure Bank and was successful in lobbying for inclusion of the yuan in the IMF special drawing rights. The U.S. responded very aggressively in finalizing the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. And so I expect a lot of push on that next year. We spent a lot of time and published two special reports on trade agreements and had a very shocking interview with Congressman woman Marcy Kaptur about the tactics being used to bully Congress over all of this. Expect the multipolar world to be very bumpy in 2016, and I think those are going to be man-made speed bumps, and it's particularly with a presidential election going on and some elections in Europe, it's going to be a bumpy ride. I one of the stories I put up was Colonel Wilkerson's interview, "The Empire is in Trouble," and I think that's the case. Part of what you're watching is the behavior of somebody in an insecure position. The sixth trend was tearing up the Treaty of Westphalia. It's something I've talked a lot about during 2015. I think the growth of mercenary armies and how that's going to dovetail with some of the technology being applied to military automation and weaponry is very dangerous. Of course, as you know, I believe ISIS is a group of essentially a gathering of mercenaries funded from by oil in an area of very high unemployment. The more war you have, the easier it is to hire folks to pretend they're terrorists. But I think you've got a lot of people looking for a check. I did a book review on a book called The Modern Mercenary. It was very helpful in understanding this, and I would encourage you, if you're interested, to take a look at that book as well. Our seventh trend was demographic derby, mass migration, falling life expectancy, and social engineering. I'll be really blunt. I think the mass migration we're seeing in Europe and the immigration we're seeing in the United States is very much engineered top-down, and I think it's being engineered to help ensure centralized control and, to a certain extent, refresh labor pools, and I talk more about it and give some of the stories. I think you're seeing falling life expectancy in many areas of the G7 nations, which are being hit hardest and where the sort of retirement savings are being pulled. That's being offset by global statistics that show rising life expectancy where extreme poverty is dropping in the emerging and frontier markets. If you look at many of the different things going on in deterioration in the food and health system, like GMOs or some of the things we've seen, vaccines and autism, that and the diminution of retirement savings or just debasement of the currency is contributing, and I put up some of the links. Some of the most bizarre things we saw in 2015 was divide and conquer, and I spent some time on the Solaria report with Junis Ricardo Stanton in writing a series called Promoting Women discussing it. The most bizarre things we saw were school surveys of 7th to 12th graders who were being asked very intimate questions regarding sexuality, family sexuality, and their transgender thoughts. It was bizarre beyond belief. So we're seeing amazing amounts of surveillance and fiddling with people at very intimate levels, which is unpleasant. But I think that is a trend, again, that's going to continue in 2016. The shriekometer was on high volume throughout the year. Last year, I talked about the Ebola shriekometer. This year, it was the ISIS and terrorist shriekometer. And the reality is, I think the explanation for this is pretty simple. If you look at the fury of the educated population in the developed world, and if you look at the polls, I'll use the U.S. as this example. The U.S. government has an approval rating at near an all-time low of 19%, but government thinks, or the population who says that thinks that you need government to deal with terrorism, and government is doing a good job with terrorism. So the way to get away with doing all the centralization and control is to simply proceed to, have a terrorist problem, and then everybody needs you. I mentioned in the wrap-up, I watched a host on Fox News bully a sort of market research group on what the greatest problems in the country were. Every time they tried to say jobs in the economy, he bullied them back into immigration and then bullied them back into ISIS. It was quite a remarkable performance, but you kind of see how this works. In fact, 6 months ago, the number one concern in all the polls by U.S. citizens was jobs in the economy, but no more. Now it's ISIS. And it was very painful. When I went to read all the corporate media wrap-ups, everything was ISIS. So I put up the Putin Explains How Obama Created ISIS. And then I did a little commentary called The Chicken Heart That Ate Up New York City. Bill Cosby used to have a great routine on essentially a shriekometer story for kids about the chicken heart that ate up New York City. It reminded me a little bit of the news and the shriekometer this year. ISIS is tearing up the Middle East. No, ISIS is in Paris. Now ISIS is coming across the border. ISIS is in your state. Ooh, maybe it's coming to your front door. So there it is. And I think the shriekometer is going to be turned to high volume next year or in 2016. Science and technology, top trend, planet entrainment. I keep beating the drum about it on entrainment, subliminal programming. I think it's, I spent a lot of time outside the country last year, and my intuition is that it's much worse in North America, but it's going where the smartphones are. One of the stories I put up in this trend was man walks off the cliff on Christmas Day. Literally, a man was so distracted by his cell phone, he walked off a cliff and died. Also, a story from emergency rooms. visits from people who hurt themselves walking into things or being hit by a car or all these different things when they're paying attention to their cell phones and being distracted. Again, we did a great special Solari report with John Rappaport on the beatdown in U.S. universities, and in there I put up the video of the professor from UC Davis basically describing the bizarre behavior by kids who've been entrained. 10th trend, water wars and weather wars. I beat the drum about this every year. I think we're seeing a lot going on around the world in terms of potential migrations as a result of droughts. Floods continue to create economic losses and hardships. And of course, every year we ask about global spring and how it relates to weird weather and weather warfare. So again, I would really encourage you in 2016, invest some time in strategic thinking on your water quality and long-term water supply, because it's going to be important. Next trend comes under the rubric of the big questions, planet Earth governance system. Who leads the governance system on Earth? That's what I want to know. That's what we have to bring transparency to, and I'm going to keep digging and networking. It's one of the reasons I want to integrate so much about what's going on in space. Number 12 is, again, the discussion is Earth's economy open or closed? I think that's a serious question. I'm going to keep spending time on that and drill down and try and figure out. And that's where we can bring transparency. And finally, 13th, faith or fear. Wow, debate all year long. Are we going to be in faith? Are we going to be in fear? Part of this is the shriekometer. I've never seen so much effort to get people in fear. And that's why it's very important in 2016. You surround yourself with people that help you stay in faith and really in a position to attract the kind of future you want to attract in this environment. So that's it on stories and trends. Check it out on the web presentation. There's a lot to chew on and a lot of great links. And we've tried to spend a lot of time, about 4 weeks, in the Solari team circulating this around and getting input and distilling it down. And I'm amazed when I read all the different wrap-ups, both in the internet media and in the corporate media. There is a tremendous shift in pushing people into sort of reality TV and manufactured stories, and a way for things that are really real. So I think it's very, very important for us to distill it down to the most important big stories that are going on that will help you see the long-term trends and help you understand what's going on around you. Okay, so let's turn to the financial market wrap-up. Again, I'll talk about it next week, but you can see from looking at the charts, it's always helpful to me to sweep all the charts in one place. So I love doing these presentations. What you'll see is everything was flashing deflation. It was the word that no central bank wanted to use, but it's obvious when you look at it. The commodities index was down another 24% in 2015 after being down 18%. We saw the oil ETN down 50%. Equity markets were flatter, falling around the world. It's too bad because, as I said, we had China and Germany up almost 30%. In the first half of the year, but came crashing down. Commodities were very painful to the emerging markets and the junk bond markets, where commodity producers have been accessing lots of capital, particularly in the United States. And so as the dollar rises, a lot of those are U.S. dollar borrowers, and they're getting slammed. If you're a company or a country in the emerging markets, you've been borrowing dollars. The price of dollars is going up. They're getting harder to get as a result of rising interest rates. Just when your revenues are getting slammed. So, I've talked about what I call the bear trap in the dollar. You know, it's definitely started in 2015, and there's real concerns about the bond market liquidity in 2016. Now, I think the central banks will do what they have to do to deal with it, but and I don't think they've shot their wad in terms of what they can do. But I do think you're going to see a lot of pain throughout the commodity producer world, whether developed or emerging markets or frontier markets. In the stock market, dividend matters. The S&P was down almost a point. It's down about 0.7%. And what that means is if you're getting a 2% dividend, you basically made 1.3% for the year. So dividends mattered in 2015, and I think they are going to matter again in 2016. Get ready. Let's talk about scenarios, which I think are very important for all sorts of planning, personal planning and investment planning. In the 2013 annual wrap-up, we said that the probability of slow burn continuing in 2014 was 80%. Sure enough, that's what happened. Then last year for 2015, we divided slow burn into two scenarios. One was volatile and violent slow burn. We gave a 50% likelihood. North America Renaissance slow burn was 40% likelihood. So 90% for the slow burn. Sure enough, it slow burned again. And so the other scenarios for 2015 were 2008 redux, basically a repeat of the financial crisis. I said that was a 1% likelihood. World War III or environmental disaster, I gave 8% likelihood, and transformation, 1%. Now, if we could bring transparency to space and outer space, I definitely think we could get that transformation much higher, which is why I want to encourage this kind of transparency. For 2016, I'm going to keep the same scenarios. Volatile and violent slow burn, I'm moving from 50 to 70%. I think clearly that's what we saw happen in many more areas in 2015. I think it's going to be more so in 2016, although hopefully the elections will have more pressure to not do crazy false flags, but we'll see. North American Renaissance slow burn, I give 10% chance. That's 30% down from 40% last year. I think there were areas with high reinvestment of 3.0 that were doing well, but a lot less because of the commodity crash. And so I would say the North America Renaissance story is just, is not working yet, if it will ever work. So I think that gives a total of 80% chance of a slow burn, but down from 90% last year. 2008 redux, I'm taking up from 1% last year to 7%. Again, I still think financial collapse is unlikely. If we're in for a financial collapse, we're going to see war. So I give war a much higher percentage. I've moved that up from 8% last year to 12%. I think cooler heads will continue to prevail in 2016, but you never know. And again, 1% transformation, but bring transparency to space and you can dramatically improve that. So let's do that. I still think we've seen a lot of jitters in the first week with the Chinese market having to halt trading twice because of big drops. I still think that's just January jitters and noise. I don't think the bull is over unless the warfare gets out of hand, which it almost did last year. And, of course, the North Koreans doing nuclear tests doesn't help. But I'm still not convinced we're in for a major consolidation or a bear market in 2016. Although I do expect Europe to be relatively stronger, but we'll talk a lot more about it. Vision 2020, I talk a little bit about last year. I had said that our goal was to have a free and inspired year ourselves and for you to have a free and inspired year as well and to support you in doing so. This year, same as last, but I'm focusing more for me and my team on building excellence in both coherence and leadership. And that impacted some of my choices for best books. Take a look at the full list of best books, but the three I chose under Culture and Leadership were The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg and Making Character First by Tom Hill. Great book by a man who decided to build integrity into his company one person at a time by doing training on how to build character. And I think it's a fascinating and inspiring example and used by companies to do just that. And then finally, Unbeatable Mind by Mark Divine, who's a retired Navy SEAL and entrepreneur, who integrates sort of the best of from martial arts, physical training, yoga, and of course the Navy SEAL training on exercising leadership in dangerous environments. He integrates it all into how to forge deep character and resiliency. And if it feels like you're living in a war sometimes, maybe warrior training by the best of the best can help. It's a remarkably interesting book by a remarkably interesting person. Let's talk about who the winners are. Our hero this year is Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez, a remarkable doctor from New York who died this year. Remarkable work in healing cancer naturally. He's someone who commanded respect all the way from Suzanne Somers to Franklin Sanders, a remarkable man, and was one of the many natural doctors who died unexpectedly and mysteriously this year. Runner-up, Scott Tipps, the head of the National Health Federation, incredible group, doing great things for health freedom, and I always keep saying it's the best, being a member is the best $35 you'll ever spend. The top movie of the year, of course, this is going to be no surprise, is The Worker Trilogy, the marvelous series from the BBC on the Gladstone Syndicate, financing rendition centers, ripping off the CIA and bribing prime ministers. It has more than a few parallels to what I suspect was the syndicate that was financing private prisons in the United States. But if you haven't seen it, read our review of it and definitely get it. It's a marvelous and very entertaining and fascinating production. Series of three movies by David Hare for the BBC. Our documentary of the year is Red Obsession, the marvelous movie narrated by Russell Crowe of the rebalancing of the Bordeaux wine industry as a result of the Chinese literally swooping up and trying to buy up the Bordeaux and the Bordeaux vintages from several years ago. It's a fascinating slice of life on the rebalancing of the global economy. And if you love Bordeaux wine as much as I do, you'll find it fascinating. And a tip of the hat to runner-up, Truth About Cancer, Ty Bollinger's wonderful series on cancer that inspires you to just do marvelous things for your health. If you haven't seen it, I would just definitely check it out. And as we do every year, we've compiled a complete list of all the movies and documentaries recommended in the Let's Go to the Movies list, so you have a complete list from 2008 to 2005. Great, great selections. Finally, closing in credits, a big thank you to all the subscribers for a great year. We can't wait to see what happens in 2016. I love having lunch because one of the things I love is seeing subscribers meet like-minded people in the same area. They have so much fun. Our first lunch is Richard Dolan is going to be joining us. He's writing a book about false flags, so you know it's going to be fascinating. Back at Club 21 in New York on April 30th, we'll be sending out the invitations for those sometime during January. Big thanks to lots of colleagues who help our wonderful Soleri team, Carolyn Betts, Robert Duper, Dr. Joseph Farrell, David Lichty, Ben Lazzardi, Rambus. Rambus is going to be back, hopefully doing a written interview every quarter. Wonderful charts from Rambus. John Rappaport, Franklin Sanders, Court Skinner, Junius Ricardo Stanton, Jeroen van Straten. A great group of friends and allies, and you can read all the credits in the back. Again, we're going to have the PDF available for you next week, and then the flip book the following week, and then we hope to have the hard copy published book available for sale at the end of the month for subscribers only. And again, as I said, many more materials taking a deeper look. I want to look to also take a deeper look in the first quarter at the intersection of the space sector and the U.S., European, and Asian stock markets. So don't be surprised if the space-related companies is the big theme for the first quarter wrap-up. And I want to end again with a quote that I started off with. The reverberation often exceeds through silence, the sound that sets it off, the reaction occasionally outdoes by way of repose, the event that stimulated it, and the past not uncommonly takes a while to happen and some long time to figure out. That's Ken Kesey. The secrecy of outer space and the evolution to a multiplanetary civilization, I believe, is an organizing principle of your and my economic and political systems, the one we live with. Thinking this through, digesting it, understanding it, understanding how it relates to the different aspects of your life, your history, where you're going, I think it's going to be very rewarding for understanding the world around us in 2016, and I hope this wrap-up helps you do that. And as you proceed with your New Year resolutions, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in one, then 2016 would be a good year to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.